Welcome. You are listening to Aftersight. This recording is intended solely for individuals who are blind or have low vision.
Thank you for joining us for Hobby Radio, read by Keith, amateur radio operator W0NX, featuring the December 2024 The Spectrum Monitor. We'll begin by finishing Amateur Radio Satellites by Keith Baker, KB1SF, VA3, KSF, New Amateur Satellites. Much like its predecessor, Tenco 2 is built into a 6U CubeSat structure and is now slated to be launched to, and eventually deployed from, the International Space Station, ISS, aboard a Japanese H-3 launch vehicle from Japan's Tanegashima Island Space Center. Besides carrying a linear transponder for amateur radio communications, the new satellite will perform various on-orbit experiments, such as a camera mission built in conjunction with a Taiwanese team, a material degradation observation mission, a space radiation observation mission, and various high-speed, up to 38,400 BPS, data transmission and microwave 5.8 GHz CW beacon communications experiments. The linear transponder will operate via a VHF uplink and UHF downlink, yet again in mode VU, the old mode J. Downlink telemetry and experiment data will also be transmitted from the satellite on 437.39 MHz with an uplink command receiver at 435.285 MHz. At the ham fair, I was told by the JAMSAT staff that the flight model satellite has been both fully integrated and tested. However, as of this writing, the Tenco 2 team was still waiting for a firm launch date to send their satellite up to the ISS. And now a feature article, the U.S. Navy Station NAA, Arlington, Virginia, 1913 to 1941, by John F. Schneider, W9FGH. This is the story of the U.S. Navy Station NAA, the country's most important radio communications facility for almost 30 years. The Navy discovers the benefits of radio. The U.S. Navy first became interested in radio in 1899 when it observed New York Herald reporters sending back dispatches from the America's Cup yacht race using Guglielmo Marconi's wireless equipment. Before long, Marconi and DeForest sets were installed on several Navy ships. Initially, this spark equipment was useful only for communicating short distances between ships. That prompted the Navy to plan a high-powered central communication station, assigned the call letters NAA. In its first tests of long-distance wireless telegraphy, NAA was able to successfully communicate with the USS Delaware off the Azores in the eastern Atlantic. The site for NAA, selected in 1910, consisted of a 13.4-acre section of the Army's Fort Myer, located at 701 Courthouse Road in Arlington, Virginia, across the Potomac River from Washington, D.C. The land was transferred from the War Department to the Department of the Navy by an act of Congress. Construction began in 1911, and transmitters were installed in 1912. NAA's three giant self-supporting towers were a local landmark, called the Three Sisters. The main tower was 600 feet tall, and the two others were 450 feet, each spaced 350 feet apart. Their 1,050 tons of steel were supported atop blocks of marble. The buried ground system covered the entire 13.5 acres. The towers initially supported three flat-top antennas made of phosphor bronze wire. The two west ends of the flat-tops were unconnected at the 600-foot tower, while the sections between north and south towers were tied with jumpers to the other flat-tops. The downlead to the transmitter was a fan shape 300 feet in length, with all wires bunched together at the building entrance. The antennas could be lowered by electric winches for periodic maintenance. NEA's total construction cost was $300,000, $9.6 million in today's dollars. It was manned by a crew of six, with an operating budget of $18,000 per year. The first transmitter was a powerful 100-kilowatt rotary spark unit designed by Reginald Fessenden. The spark gap rotor was belt-driven from a 200-horsepower motor. Testing began in 1912, with the first official transmissions taking place on February 13, 1913. Spark versus ARC. Shortly after NAA opened, the Federal Telegraph Company pressed the Navy to try out one of its Poulsen ARC transmitters. The ARC transmitter was a sealed chamber in which an electrical arc burned in hydrogen gas between a carbon cathode and a water-cooled copper anode. The Navy was at first reluctant, but after some political pressure, they agreed to a test. Federal installed one of their 35-kilowatt arc sets, and Rear Admiral George Clark conducted a coverage test aboard the USS Salem on a cruise to Gibraltar, with daily signal comparisons being made from each transmitter. The result was that the Federal ARC transmitter proved to be superior and was able to maintain communications well beyond the required distance of 3,000 miles. After this successful test, the Navy ordered its first 100-kilowatt ARC unit. Housed behind 6-inch thick doors and soundproofed walls, it became the primary NAA transmitter until the advent of vacuum tube rigs, maintaining regular daytime communication with Paris, San Francisco, and Darien, Panama. The original spark transmitter was retained after negotiations with Fessenden, and it continued in use until 1923. NAA's receiving station was not in Arlington, but located 4 miles away in the Navy Munitions Building. Sending took place from the same location, with messages traveling by wire to Arlington. 8 remotely operated transmitter keys could be simultaneously operated at NAA. After the successful deployment of NAA, similar Navy stations were built at Darien, Panama, 1913, Cavite, Philippines, 1913, San Diego, 1915, and Oahu, Hawaii, Hospital Point, 1916. In 1917, an adjoining 3 acres was purchased for an expansion project at NAA. The three sisters would now support 6 wire antennas, the main antenna and 1 each for aircraft, Army, Navy, voice, and later broadcasting. The property was officially incorporated as the Community of Radio Township, Virginia, and a post office with that name was even established. The first experimental transatlantic transmission of speech from NAA was conducted by AT&T in 1915 and heard in France and Hawaii. AT&T President Theodore Vail's message originated from the company's offices in New York City. It was the first time a voice from USA was heard in Europe. Commercial services of NAA. NAA was the WWV of its day, broadcasting time signals provided by the Naval Observatory in Washington. This was critical to both Navy and commercial ships at sea that needed accurate time to adjust their chronometers, essential for determining their positions. The time signals were also popular with amateur radio operators and anyone else who needed accurate clock settings. Many jewelers installed radio receivers in their shops to set their clocks. NAA's time signals were broadcast for 5 minutes each day at 11:55 a.m. and 9:55 p.m. Each second was a CW dot, with the 29th second omitted. The start of each minute was a long dash. Weather forecasts were sent on a regular schedule by CW on 710 meters, 420 kilohertz, with the information being received by wire telegraph from the Weather Bureau. There were also 10 daily market reports from the Department of Agriculture. These same CW services were also broadcast on longwave over NAT in New Orleans and NAJ at the Great Lakes Naval Base. With the onset of World War I, the American public was prohibited from owning or operating any radio equipment, including receivers. All wartime communications between the Navy Department and U.S. forces in France were sent over NAA, as well as through several commercial stations that had been impounded by the government: Marion, Massachusetts, Tuckerton, New Jersey, Sayville, New York, and New Brunswick, New Jersey. All this encrypted message traffic was controlled from a single room inside the Navy Department building in Washington. In 1918, the Navy constructed a 1,200-kilowatt transmitter in France to provide service back to the U.S. The Lafayette Station was the world's most powerful at the time, but was not placed into service until after the war. Broadcasting. After the war, once the public could again own and operate radio receivers, regular voice broadcasts were implemented from NAA. Daily radio phone weather broadcasts were now being sent at 10 p.m. Eastern Time each day on medium wave, the AM broadcast band, along with the usual CW forecasts on 5,950 meters, 50 kilohertz. Time signals, marine and land weather reports, crop and market reports, known as hog flashes, ship reports, and news bulletins were also being sent on 2,650 meters, 113 kilohertz, using the original Fessenden spark transmitter. On occasion, NAA was also used to broadcast presidential messages. After the advent of broadcasting in 1920, many local stations would rebroadcast the NAA time signals so audiences who couldn't tune the longwave signals could set their clocks. Starting in 1920, NAA itself began broadcasting occasional entertainment programs to the public, along with sister station NOF in Anacostia, D.C. Both stations broadcast the dedication of the Lincoln Memorial on May 30, 1922. But because NOF was increasingly needed for other duties, all public broadcasting was shifted to NAA in 1922, operating on 422 kilohertz using a 750-watt transmitter. In 1923, this unit was replaced with a 1,000-watt operating in the AM broadcast band. The initial frequency used was 490 meters, 611 kilohertz, but this was moved to 434 meters, 690 kilohertz, due to interaction with other transmitters at the site. This NAA transmitter broadcast weekly Marine and Navy Band concert broadcasts. The Departments of Interior, Agriculture, Labor, War, Health, Internal Revenue, Treasury, and Commerce also took broadcast time for lectures on various topics. In 1923, two additional 200-foot towers were constructed, as well as 16 additional poles ranging in height from 25 to 70 feet, supporting other antennas of various types. In 1924, the dirigible Shenandoah broke away from its mooring mast and was carried away by strong winds with its crew aboard. NAA maintained radio contact with the airship for 9 hours. Eventually, the crew was able to get the ship under control, but it took over 400 ground crew to wrestle it back to the ground the next day. Starting in 1926, daily weather maps were sent on 8,000 meters, 37 kilohertz, using the Jenkins system. This specialized service was primarily of value to mariners. Vacuum tubes reigned supreme. By the mid-1920s, NAA was operating 6 transmitters on longwave, medium, and shortwave frequencies, with operations shared between the Army and Navy. The 30-kilowatt ARC transmitter operated on the main antenna and was used by the Navy to communicate with Cuba and Key West, as well as for broadcasting aeronautical and weather reports. There was a 500 kHz tube transmitter for emergency marine communications, a 250 watt transmitter for airplane communications, another 250 watt rig for speeches and concerts, and a 1200 watt long wave transmitter for band concerts and presidential addresses. Reliable vacuum tube transmitters became available in the early 1920s, and their technical superiority quickly supplanted the older technologies. The signals from spark, damped wave, transmitters occupied a wide bandwidth, causing considerable interference in the crowded long-wave marine frequencies. To their benefit, the CW signals from arc transmitters occupied less bandwidth, but generated mush noise adjacent to their channel. They also created substantial harmonic interference, measured as high as the 30th harmonic. Even though modifications were made to arc transmitters to reduce interference in later years, their days were numbered once high-powered transmitting tubes became commercially available. By 1926, tube transmitters had replaced their predecessors in 27 shore stations, with plans being made for another 14. The demise of NAA. Over time, NAA gradually ended its public broadcasts, and its time signals on 690 kHz were eliminated in 1936. But naval observatory time signals continued to be sent on 113 and 9,425 kHz from NAA, as well as from NSS in Annapolis. Gradually, all operations were shifted from NAA to NSS, where three new 600-foot towers had been constructed in 1938. Finally, when Washington's National Airport opened in 1941, the NAA towers were deemed to be an aircraft hazard and were dismantled, closing the station forever. The original NAA buildings are still standing and are used by the Navy today as office space. The National Bureau of Standards Station WWV began operations in Greenbelt, Maryland in 1945, taking over the task of broadcasting time signals. WWV continues to provide this important service today from Fort Collins, Colorado. And now the World of Shortwave Listening by Rob Wagner, VK3BVW. RobVK3BVW@gmail.com. Philippines, a powerful broadcasting voice to the world. Almost since the start of broadcasting, radio has been a vital part of how Filipino citizens consume their media. It began as far back as 1922 with the commencement of KZKZ AM in Manila. Starting with just a 5-watt transmitter, the signal was boosted in 1924 to 100 watts. It didn't take long before broadcasting facilities and news stations spread rapidly across the Philippine Islands on both medium wave and short wave. During World War II, the 1942 Japanese invasion of the country saw many stations, especially around Manila, shut down or commandeered by the Japanese Army for propaganda purposes. Once the American retaking of the Philippines was completed in 1945, broadcasting flourished again in a much more regulated manner. The first radio station to return to the air was KZFM, reopening in May 1945 and operated by the U.S. Army Office of War Information. Later, in September 1946, the station's call sign changed to DZFM, part of the Philippine Broadcasting System. In 1972, dictator Ferdinand Marcos declared martial law, closing, taking over, and controlling radio broadcasters and other media. Then, in 1986, the EDSA Revolution, a.k.a. the People Power Revolution, saw the freeing of media constraints. Thousands of islands. Many people forget how vast the Philippines expand through the Western Pacific. Consisting of 7,641 islands, spread across 300,000 square kilometers, 186,411 square miles, the country is broadly bounded by the South China Sea to the west, the Philippine Sea on the eastern side, and the Celebes Sea to the south. It shares maritime borders with Taiwan, Japan, Palau, Indonesia, Malaysia, Vietnam, and China. The country's population is estimated to have grown to around 114 million in 2024. The sprawling area, known as Metropolitan Manila, comprises 16 smaller, highly urbanized cities with a combined population of 13.5 million, 2020 census. The Philippines is culturally rich and diverse, incorporating indigenous Filipino, Spanish, and American elements. Christianity is the dominant religion. It is clear that, due to the expansiveness of the country and its religious background, shortwave radio was an attractive medium for both reaching the many far-flung islands and to religious broadcasters. Some past Philippine broadcasters. Over the decades, numerous small stations could be heard on the shortwave bands. Back in the late 60s, three of these included the Mindanao Broadcasting Network, offering 500 watts within a variable frequency range between 7,265 and 7,280 kilohertz. Another was the Voice of the State University, running 1 kilowatt out of the University of the Philippines in Quezon City near Manila on 7,150 kilohertz. The third was the National Civic Defense Administration, a government station on 3,305 and 5,970 kilohertz. In more recent times, two established broadcasters closed their shortwave services. The first was the Southeast Asia Radio Voice, SEARV, which began in 1965 as a project of the National Council of Churches in the Philippines and the World Association for Christian Broadcasting. Using a new 50-kilowatt transmitter into a log periodic antenna, SEARV was noted to have a strong signal in South Asia and many other parts of the world. It also had a reputation as a good verifier of DXers' reception reports. The second and even more well-known religious station was Radio Veritas Asia. It began broadcasting in 1969 as simply Radio Veritas, but ceased in 1973. It reopened in 1975 with 50 kilowatts and a good signal throughout Asia. During the People Power Revolution in 1986, its transmitter was blown up by pro-Marcos forces, but returned with a significantly more powerful 250-kilowatt transmitter, thanks to the new government and the Catholic Church. Indeed, post-revolution, the new president, Corazon Aquino, is reported on a 1986 Radio Veritas QSL card. For being the only available and reliable broadcasting facility that supported the People's Revolution on February 22nd to the 25th, 1986, faced with great odds and dangers, Radio Veritas became the nerve center for the generation of people power until its transmitting facility was destroyed by loyalist forces. The indomitable spirit of its staff enabled them to assume a heroic role in defying oppression and voicing out the truth. Sadly, the station was permanently closed on June 30, 2018. Thank you for joining us for Hobby Radio, read by Keith.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aftersight.org or by calling 303-786-7777.